Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, in the first half, we have Jake Steinfeld, Body by Jake. Remember that guy? Very inspirational story. He's going to pump you up, man, so get ready for that. Tom Skerritt, who's been, God, in every movie, you know, Top Gun, Alien, all that stuff. Interesting talk with him. That's all coming up in a second. First, let me tell you about Pure Talk USA. Are you with AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile? Well, Pure Talk uses the exact same network as they do. Same towers, same coverage, literally cost half. I'm a customer, and my first question was, can I keep my phone? And they said, yes, you may keep your phone. We will give you a SIM card, and you get the same service as before for half the money. Unlimited talk, text, 2 gigs of data, just $20 a month. Average person saves $400 a year. Why is it cheaper? That's my question. You're using the same equipment. Now, how can it be cheaper? Well, they don't have the big retail stores or the billion-dollar ad campaigns. You only pay for the data you need. U.S.-based customer service, and the CEO is a veteran. Grab your phone, dial #250, say the keyword, Adam Carolla, to save $250 off any iPhone, including the new iPhone SE. That's #250 and say Adam Carolla.
Buy tickets now for Modern Drummer Festival 2020, streaming on Live by Live, Saturday, September 12th at 8 p.m. Eastern. Catch performances from more than 30 of the world's best drummers, including Chad Smith of Red Hot Chili Peppers, Taylor Hawkins of Foo Fighters, Mike Portnoy, Cindy Blackman Santana, and many more. Plus, a special tribute to drumming legend Neil Peart. All proceeds benefit brain tumor research at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in honor of Neil Peart. Get your tickets today at livexlive.com/moderndrummer and tune in September 12th at 8 p.m. Eastern, only on Live by Live.
From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, and brought to you by Bet Online, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Tom Skerritt, and Body by Jake's Jake Steinfeld. With Bald Brian on sound effects, Gina Grad on news, and Jeff Cesario on sports. And now, white, non-college educated voter, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice, but on your mandate, you get it on now. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for sharing. I saw the ratings went up the other day, so thank you for sharing this show. Good day, Gina Grad.
Good day to you.
Handball, Brian.
Hey, now.
I was, again, just at the other shop looking through some of the old memorabilia from K-Rock, brochures and flyers and pamphlets and programs and whatnot, and I keep looking at these, like, Acoustic Christmas from 1997, Universal Amphitheater. Funny, lots of interesting little things. Like the front is all done by Matt and Trey. It's got the South Park sort of Christmas thing.
Wow.
Because they got started with their South Park Christmas thing, right?
That was viral. That was the literal viral video. Like that got passed around by a videotape.
Right. So you look at it now and you go, oh yeah, South Park. But this is 1997.
Wow.
So I don't know that we had that reaction in 1997, but it's so funny. It's like it's ubiquitous now, but this is 23 years ago.
We'll have to look up when South Park hit the air. I was in college. It would have been around 1997.
Yeah, I was going to say 96, actually.
Okay. That's yeah, I was in college. Guess. It was a huge phenomenon.
97 is when it hit it.
August 97, first episode.
There you go.
So this is just got on the air when this came out. So this is Friday, Saturday night. And again,
there were two nights of the
acoustic
Christmas show. Yeah.
Right. The Weenie Roast was one night. So this is December 5th, 1997. I guess they did a Friday and a Saturday. Oh, it was a big to do. First night. So this is Friday night. Fiona Apple. Good. Bjork. Who
wow.
I don't talk enough about, but I love me some Bjork.
I'm already going night two.
I'm so glad that you like me and that I could be there for you.
Bjork, I love that video where you're wearing that floral gown and your summer dress and you're running through North Hollywood. Yeah, that was so wonderful.
Thank you. It was like I was in a dream, and it was a dream that I had, and now everybody can share in my dream.
Oh, I'm so glad. I love that. It's what was the name of her big hit with that?
It's Oh So Quiet.
Oh So Quiet. I love that song.
It's all so still.
Yeah. Wait, are you shushing me?
Alone. And so peaceful until you ring the bell. Woo-hoo! You like that? You like that?
I love that. You know, look.
Song's got a great hook.
I'm no Bjork, but I used to do a cheer, Mrs. Bjork, called Here We Come a Truckin' In. Shh, 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 shh. Guess you wonder where we've been. Shh. I wasn't shushing. I was chushing, but it's same.
Shh, everyone, shh,
hey. Seems like it goes against the spirit of a cheer to shush the crowd.
I was chewing, I think. Is Bjork your first name, your last name, your middle name?
Bjork is just Bjork.
Right, but you still have to be Bjork. Like, Madonna's first name's Madonna.
Great song.
I love the song. It's got, in a way, it's cheating with the big band and the horns and everything, but so yeah. What? So Bjork, Miss Bjork, yes. Would I call your mom Miss Bjork? Or?
She is Mother Bjork.
Okay, but so are you Bjork? Like Bjork. Your name is like Bjork Osterholden? Or is your name is your name like Heather Bjork?
Many people don't know this. My name is Bjork Goldstein.
But you.
Shh.
Oh, quiet.
Oh, no,
I get
sense.
Why you're shushing people. I swear to God, that video was like shot in NoHo or something, like on Lancashire. Like there's an old car dealership there or
it was
something.
Like a Busby.
Busby Berkeley?
Busby Berkeley. Yeah, exactly. That was the vibe.
Ooh, what if Bjork got together with Busby?
Bjork Berkeley. Yeah.
I don't feel like Busby would go well with Bjork. I'll be Busby. Hey, sweetheart, put on this one piece and hop in the pool, would you please?
Oh, no, I don't wear a one piece.
Oh, two piece. Sorry, two piece. Whatever. Hop in the deep end, toots. Time's money.
Oh, is it his swan?
Hold on,
now?
Steve. Get the jib rigged. We got to shoot him from up top. They're going to be Steve, they're going to be doing like a blooming rose move, all right? All right, you got it?
Yep, we're good.
All right.
Where are the northern lights?
Yeah, I'm sorry. What's your name, Dork?
Bjork.
Bjork? Why are you not in a bathing suit, bitch?
Oh, no, this is my concept of a bathing suit.
Listen, my name's Busby. You know what also starts with B, sweetheart? Boss. You get it?
Oh.
Somebody give me a fresh cigar. Listen, toots.
Oh, no, it's Bjork.
Listen, toots, put on that one piece, jump in the deep end of the Olympic-sized pool, and get making with the aquatic dancing.
Don't forget the swim cap.
Oh, yeah, the swim cap. Where's the swim cap?
Oh, no, Bjork doesn't wear a swim cap.
Who?
Bjork.
Bjork doesn't wear a swim cap. Well, tell fucking Bjork she does when she's working with Busby.
Oh.
You tell Bjork, Busby said she's wearing a goddamn swim cap.
This is a hostile work environment.
I don't even know what the fuck that is. This is 1927, sweetheart. All right. Apple.
Forgot, directed by Spike Jones.
Of course.
Yeah. 1997, first night. Good. Was, we're looking at the video. I just want to see if this was where I grew up, like in North Hollywood. It's sort of. On Lancashire,
Chris, you're gonna fast forward to almost
something.
Through, probably.
She probably has to go outside with the big jib shot and all that.
This is where the action happens.
All that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it was shot in San Fernando Valley.
Oh, shot in the San Fernando Valley.
Let's see.
Everyone's dancing and they do this like big jib shots. Yeah, I think it's down Lancashire where like NoHo was. Yeah, Goodyear Tire. All right, Chumbawamba. We'll do a reenactment of Chumbawamba.
Night two committed.
That I can't help you with.
Fiona Apple, Bjork.
What's Chumbawamba going to do acoustically?
Well, first off, they didn't do anything acoustically. They just called it the Acoustic Christmas, and everyone just plugged in. You know, then they called it the Acoustic Christmas, and then Rob Zombie would come in there with a 20-foot amp and just start going, "Whoa!" And they're like, "That's not Acoustic Christmas."
I think it became the Almost Acoustic Christmas.
Right.
The title.
Yep. And then Jamiroquai came in. Yeah. Yep. Jane's Addiction after that. Mm-hmm. Matchbox 20.
Really underrated.
Sarah McLachlan.
Woo.
Smash Mouth.
Wow. For 97?
Sneaker Pimps.
Wow, I forgot about Sneaker Pimps.
They had
pimps.
One great song.
I could never be a woman. Wasn't that them?
The Verve.
No, 600 grand.
Oh, God. They don't even know Sneaker Pimps.
The song rules.
The Verve. Then the Verve came in.
Ooh, fuck it. Not the Verve Pipe, the Verve?
The Verve, not the Verve Pipe. Yeah, that's right.
I got to think twice. Fuck.
You love the Verve.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, I think the Sneaker Pimps, Giovanni will figure this one out, but the Sneaker Pimps was one of the bands that walked out on Loveline. Like, we started talking about blowjobs, and one of the drunk guys just went, fuck it, I'm walking back to the hotel. It was like 11 o'clock at night. We're in Culver City. The hotel's in Beverly Hills. Like, he's like, I'm leaving. There was no Uber or anything. Culver City was a ghost town back then. He's just drunk. He's like, I'm leaving. I didn't even know what happened to him.
Was that an offensive topic for him?
I had an open door policy, but only about leaving. You know what I mean? It's like other people have an open door policy about coming in. Yeah.
Not entering.
My door swings one way, baby. It's like my asshole. It's just
it's hard to open.
It's right. So my thing is, it's wide open. If you'd like to leave, it's going to be tough to get in. That was the less guests, the less people I had to talk to. Night number two, the Aquabats.
Yeah.
How'd you like this, though? The Aquabats, followed by David Bowie.
All right.
Has there ever been a bigger chasm?
Wait a second.
Historically, bigger chasm. No. You know what I mean? I mean, there's no bigger chasm than Bowie, one of the greatest innovators in music ever, and then the Aquabats.
Yeah, unless Willie Nelson strolled out, maybe, but that's it.
I don't know. When you look at David Bowie's career,
that's insane.
There's just no more than David Bowie. I mean, I'm not even a huge Bowie fan, but you have to recognize what that guy's done.
And he was gettable?
Everyone was gettable to K-Rock in the 90s, man.
Yeah.
That's true.
They got the Aquabats. They got the to be fair, the Aquabats were already working at Universal Studios.
Okay.
So they're actually working there.
Yeah, as soon as so
the shift's over.
They didn't have to pay for transportation or roadies or anything. Aquabats, then David Bowie, then Everclear.
Feeling good.
Then Green Day.
Feeling great.
Get ready, Brian. Then Live.
Wow. Okay. I saw Live in concert in Kansas City.
Then Portishead.
Sure. Also saw it in Kansas City.
I would argue.
I loved Portishead.
I would argue the best head. Then, I don't know. Get ready, Brian, to be brought down to earth. Save Ferris.
Fuck. Well, you got to go to the bar.
You got to go to the bar.
Got to go to the bathroom.
Then you got Sugar Ray. Then you got Third Eye Blind. Mm-hmm. And then you got 311.
Wow.
I can go. Yeah. I can get down with some. 311's fun live band. I can get
that
down with
so
that.
That is so deliciously 90s, that list. Oh, my God.
It's crazy. And also, when you think about some of these, it's kind of interesting because you look at this stuff and it's like you see Foo Fighters, not on this list, but the last one. You see Foo Fighters, you're like, oh, they're just getting started, the Foo Fighters. You know, now they're...
The guy from Nirvana.
Whatever. And then there's, I don't know, Portishead or something, or whatever the band is. And you're like, think how far how many different directions you can go career-wise in 20 years. You know what I mean? Just... Yeah. Incredible what they've done and what they haven't done. So in sort of then what you should do with this information is you kind of think, well, who's Portishead now and who's the Foo Fighters now? Do you know what I mean? Like what bands or even what comedians or what personalities or whatever, you know, who is that now and who's which one now? I have no idea what Portishead is up to. Jake, Body by Jake. Jake Steinfeld is on hold. I talked to Jake off the air. We have a mutual friend, and Jake's just a motivated camper, man. So I thought we'd have him on the show, give us a little motivation. Jake, how you doing, brother?
Adam, what's up, man?
How are you? Good to speak to you again. Jake, tell us your story. I feel like your story is going to be pretty motivational.
Well, listen, man, first of all, it's great to see you. It's been a while. You know, we talk a bunch, but haven't been on the show in a number of years, man. But it's good to see you and everything that you're doing. I'm glad you're healthy and the crew is healthy. I see Brian and Gina there. Hey, guys.
Hi there.
Jake, the last time you were in, you actually gave me one of the coolest thrills of my life, which was being able to hold the Olympic torch. You brought it in with you.
That's it. And it's sitting right behind me there.
That's pretty badass.
It's yeah, man. It's been that long. My gosh, man. But it's great to see you guys. And hey, listen, life is great. We live in an awesome country. And I couldn't have done what I've been able to accomplish if I wasn't in this magnificent country of ours. So I was, as you remember, you know, I was an overweight kid. I had a bad stutter growing up. I was born in Brooklyn, New York, and raised in Baldwin, Strong Island. And my dad bought me a set of weights at 13 years old. And it was one of those, I'm a big believer in life is about moments. And it was one of those crazy stories where he called me out into the backyard. And he said, he had this weight bench set up. And he said, come on, let's do some bench pressing. And I kind of looked down at my Twinkies, you know, and it was like, this is not for me. And he was a guy that would ask you to do something once. And that was it. The weights sat there all summer. Come time the fall. Now I grew up in New York, so I lived in the basement. I'm the oldest of four kids. I'm 62 now. So this was the early 70s. So my bedroom in the basement, had my black light posters. I had Alice Cooper on one wall. I had Jimi Hendrix on another wall. I used to love to listen to Frank Sinatra's. I did it my way though. At the end of Frank's album, there's this 10 seconds of wild applause for Frank. And I would just cue it up every now and again, just to visualize myself either mowing the lawn at Shea Stadium or, you know, waving to people. My mother thought there was something wrong with this kid.
Hey, Jake.
But this night.
Sorry, yeah. Go ahead. Oh, I just found.
No. I'm
looking at your stuff here. I forgot that Haley Steinfeld is your niece, right?
Oh, my God. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah, yeah.
The Steinfelds.
True Grit.
Yeah.
Bumblebee.
She's
Pitch Perfect. Yeah, she's awesome. I love True
yes.
Grit, by the way. And
awesome.
And sorry, I'll let you get back to inspiration. Remind me, but you didn't. I mean, I'm guess you weren't a great student with your stutter and your weight,
man.
Right?
And no, I had a C average. I had 1,000 on my SATs, and you get 400 for signing your name on both of the tests, man. So I was never a student in school. With the stutter was tough for me, man, because of I could read, but people who stutter and understand this, man, the more nervous you get, the tighter it gets in your throat, man. And the B's and the D's and the T's. And the worst thing in the world for me as a kid was when a teacher said, okay, everybody, we're going to take a paragraph a piece and we're going to stand up and read out loud. And I would sweat, man, like Albert Brooks in Broadcast News, you know. By the time it got to me, I mean, if it was a choice of standing up and reading, guys, or jumping off the Empire State Building, I would have jumped.
Well, you know,
because once I got up, go ahead.
You know, it's interesting. I'm thinking about bad students. Think about that all the time. I was taking a walk with my every time I look in the mirror, it reminds me of bad students. And I was taking a walk with my son last night. You guys tell me if this seems true. And my son is a smart kid and he's not a good student. And we're taking the dog for a walk last night, and I just looked at him. I said, you're a bad student, but you're smart. You know you're smart. You got a good vocabulary, speak well. You can read and write and all that. You're a bad student. And I said, when I was a kid, when I was in the ninth grade, like you're entering the ninth grade, if you were a bad student, then you could be a janitor or maybe a fireman or maybe a cop or maybe a truck driver or construction worker. But bad student meant very limited. It did not mean entrepreneur. It didn't mean captain of industry. It didn't mean starting your own brands like Body by Jake and becoming a, you know, celebrated
author. Well,
that's
the thing, though. But, you know, listen, though, Adam, but the thing is this. This is the great thing about this world that we live in, this country that we live in. Because, listen, thank God for my parents, very honestly, because the principal called my parents into a meeting and wanted to put me in that, you know, that room 222.
Yeah.
Which was, you know, the kids who ended up in shop class and, you know, and doing those things. And hey, listen, there's plenty of room for everybody. But my mother and father didn't send me to a speech pathologist. I worked it out through myself. And however I did it, I did it. I pushed myself. And I guess my question to you is, so you tell your kid he's a bad student. You go, listen, honey, you're a bad student.
Well, I think I used the word poor. But either way.
Okay, poor.
Or possibly. Probably well below average. The point is like what I'm saying to my kid, which wasn't said to me, obviously, was if you were college material, then you could be a doctor, then you could be a lawyer, then you could be a businessman, you could be a professional, you could make money, and you could be successful. If you're a bad student, then you weren't going to college, then you couldn't be successful, but you could be a gardener. Or you could be a garbage man or a truck driver. And those were kind of how we broke it up. And so what you would say to the bad students is, don't you want to be a professional versus being a truck driver? But since every single person my son studies turns out dropped out of college or dropped out of something or never completed anything and then went on to be some sort of tech millionaire or own a sports franchise. Or like, you know, even his famous Uncle Jimmy, you know, a couple semesters at Arizona State, eventually drops out and goes and does something else, you know. Then
bada boom, bada bing, host the Oscars.
Right. You blink your eyes, he's hosting
bada
the
boom,
Oscars.
Bada bing. That's
so
it.
What I'm kind of saying to my son, even though it sounds discouraging, is really encouraging, which is, you're not a student. It's not your thing. It's not for you.
And by the way, it's not everybody's thing. And I think if you understand that, look, I have four kids myself, and I've always told them, I was always very honest too, you know, because at one point someone's going to show them your report card. Someone's going to show them that I bought the flag home a number of times. I had a bunch of deltoids, and, you know, I wasn't a good student. Like I said, you know, I had a 71. Listen, when I got a C on a test, guys, my mom took me to get Carvel ice cream. I'm just telling you. So the bar, really kind of get in the head here, guys. My dream was to become a bodybuilder. I started working out with weights. The weights and me really connected. And I had this dream to go to California to become Mr. America. I was the first one in my family to go to college. I went to college upstate New York. You guys know Cornell University?
Sure.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, I went to Cortland down the street.
Down the street.
So it was a good D3 school, but it snowed from the day you got up there. So it wasn't too conducive to walk around in your gold lamé posing trunks in 18 inches of snow. And I had this moment. Life's about moments. My mom used to check in. Well, she called every day to see how I was doing. And I finally got up enough courage to tell her. I said, Ma, I'm going to go to California to become a bodybuilder. And there was silence on the phone. And all of a sudden I hear, Herbie, my dad's name, pick up the phone and talk to your kid. I'm putting my head in the oven. And that was the bus ride from upstate New York to Baldwin, Long Island. Felt like I was going from L.A. to the moon. And it was the longest bus ride in the world because I finally told my parents my dream. And I know, look, you guys are all very successful guys. Adam, I've known you for a long time. You've been able to parlay your success into books and all kinds of great things. Everybody has the shot to succeed. And for me, sometimes when you talk about dreams to people close to you, they seem to be the most negative. And whether it's because they don't want to see you get hurt or with friends or a girlfriend or something like that, they think that, wait a second, if Gina is going to be successful, that means there's not enough success for me to be successful. So I'm going to keep her down. And I learned very quickly when I got home, my father said, look, get it out of your system. Go to California. My girlfriend, you're never going to make it. My friend said, you're never going to make it. I get to California, summer 77, when the dinosaurs still roam the earth. I mean, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Lou Ferrigno, all the big bodybuilders were there. I was at World Gym on Main Street in Santa Monica, and I entered the Mr. Southern California contest in 1978. All the magazines said, eat 18 eggs and 24 chickens a day, and you too could become Mr. America. I clucked a lot, guys, but I didn't become Mr. America because the guy that beat me was on steroids. No one ever talked about steroids in the magazine.
Right.
And the thing for me was this, really simple. I'm a big believer. I'm sure you guys talk to your kids about decision making. If you have to think about something too long, it's probably something you shouldn't be doing. And for me, I was just afraid to take steroids. I remember in fourth and fifth grade when the nurse would do that TB test, the little four-prong thing. She would hit me with that little thing, and I'd faint in fourth and fifth grade, let alone put a needle in my own buttissimo. And I had to make a decision at 19 years old that I wasn't going to go back to New York a loser. Not in my own mind, but I didn't want to have my friends think, oh, he came back. Because he didn't pursue, he didn't become Mr. America. I love what working out did for me. I love how I felt. I stayed. The best thing in the world that ever happened. I didn't know what I was going to do, but as every good musclehead does, I was catching rays, working out, and bouncing in a bar. I was living in Studio City, California. And this one moment, once again, life is about moments. This actress was getting ready to do a Club Med commercial, had come over to me at the pool and said, hey, you know, I see you here all the time. I got this commercial I have to do. I have to wear a bikini. I wonder if you can help me. And I've got 6 weeks to do it. And if you remember, Adam, right, this was 79. Jane Fonda had just come on the scene with the high-impact aerobics. Women were very intimidated by using weights at the time because they thought they were going to get big muscles. So what I did is, you know, she said, could you do a workout for me? You know, I like you, but I don't want to look like you. And I said, okay, yeah, I'll come up with something. She goes, how much? I go, I don't know. Give me gas money for my 1977 white Camaro with Jake 77 on the license plate. I always kept a very low profile, very important. And she gave me the address of her boyfriend's house in Beverly Hills. True story. So I improvised with a workout with a broomstick, a towel, and a chair, the towel for resistance training, right? Gina, if I were to give you a towel, and I say, pull down, I would pull up for bicep curls. They're always giving you more resistance than if you had two 10-pound dumbbells in your hand. I added two cans of Mama's tomato paste and a chair. Really simple, 30 minutes, bang. I went to her boyfriend's house in Beverly Hills, rang the doorbell. If you weren't on the cover of Musclehead Digest, I didn't know who you were. Guy answers the door. Turns out to be Francis Ford Coppola. I just looked at him and I thought, hey, this guy could use a workout too. And It was amazing because they started going to parties and people started saying, you look great. And what's his phone number? I never listed my phone number, guys, because remember, no cell phones back then. I came from upstate New York to L.A. You had to put your phone number in the phone book, which I never did. And you know this town in Hollywood. People want to get a hold of you and they can't. They seem to want you more. And all of a sudden, I'm getting phone calls from Steven Spielberg, Harrison Ford, Priscilla Presley, Bette Midler, all these incredible people. And I learned this unbelievable lesson because I got to hang with them all. They're no different than us. The only difference is they had a dream and never quit on their dream and never took no for an answer. And, you know, that was my schooling. That gave me all the incentive in the world to say to myself, you know, I might never direct ET too, but I'm going to have my own successes in life.
You trained.
And I was able to parlay all that famous by association into books and videos and television shows and television networks, and just kept on. Everything to do with hope and health and family was everything I've been about.
Jake, you trained Harrison Ford for Indiana Jones, Temple of Doom, Last Crusade?
Yeah, absolutely.
God.
I trained H. You know, I've known him now for 42 years.
H.
It's really amazing, man. And it's been, hey, listen, I call you A.
You know what? You know, it's kind of funny. Back when you were talking about your friends or your family or whatever, sort of not believing in you the most. And if you kind of think about it, it makes sense, even though you wish it wasn't so. But if you were at a party and you were just talking to people at a party and one guy said, like, I'm a personal trainer, you'd go, oh, and the other guy said, I'm a film editor. And you'd go, oh, and the other guy said, I'm a director. You'd go, oh. But what if one of the people you were talking to, you knew, wet their bed when they were 14. You knew, ate cereal out of the box with their hand, and you caught them beating off two times. You'd be less impressed. You know what I mean?
Party? So wait a second. So what party are we at here?
The problem with your parents and your family and your friends, they know all that. So when you just meet a stranger, you go, wow, look at this impressive stranger. You don't have all this shitty history where they know what a fuck up you are.
And that was the deal. So for me, in my whole life, the bar was always set so low. So even in town, even in this town, a bodybuilder's coming in with a stutter is going to have a meeting with you. They're not expecting much. So it gave me an awesome opportunity. So all throughout my career, it's been, you know, life's about moments, and success is failure turned inside out. I've been very blessed in my life. And, you know, now I know we were talking, Adam, and especially right now with this pandemic, and everyone is trying to find themselves. But, you know, nutrition is important. People need to stay healthy. And I've been very fortunate. You know, I've been putting fitness centers in elementary and middle schools around this great country of ours for the last 12, 13 years, which has really been great for me. And I've been in the infomercial business. I founded Major League Lacrosse. The action is exciting. And nutrition is something that I talked about but never really got involved in, because I don't take supplements. I don't take vitamins. But I drink nutrition shakes. I make shakes all the time.
Well, let me plug you. I'll plug, because it'll sound more genuine,
better,
and a more sincere coming from me, which is
I'm good at this.
I talked to Jake, and I remember my grandparents, both of them, in their last years, when they're having a little trouble with the food and keeping food down and eating stuff, they were drinking these Ensure shakes. You know, and I was looking at the Ensure shakes, and it was corn syrup and dehydrated sunflower oil and red dye number 7. And I was like, this is what they're feeding the old people who need nutrition more. You know, look, when you're 14, you're basically an army jeep that'll burn anything you dump into it. You can live off of uncooked top ramen. You'll go out and be a high school track star, you know. But when you're 90 or when you're older, like, you really need the good stuff. And it was all just shit. And so when I was talking to Jake, Jake's like, I came up with a good version of that, where it's like, it tastes good. It is that, but it actually is good for you. Has the high protein, has the essential vitamins and the minerals.
Look at you, man. Well, look at you, Adam. I love that you, I appreciate this, and it's important. But most importantly, it's for people. Listen, I'm 62 now, right? I think if you and I hung out as kids and you said, hey, Jake, so how old's your dad? And I said, 62. You go, shit, that's an old guy.
Right.
But I feel like I'm 21 years old, you know. But when you hit 45, 50, nutrition is super important. And what you put in your body is so important. And look, the world didn't need another, you know, shake, one of these other kind of nutrition shakes. It just needed the best one. So I trademarked the words, don't quit, in 1981 from a poem that I was given when I was cut from my 8th grade basketball team. True story, guys. I know we're kind of running tight on time.
No, tell me the story. I appreciate this story.
No, so I go out for my 8th grade basketball team. I had just started working out with weights, feeling good about myself, and I was going to step out to go out for the team because I was a really good basketball player, guys. I mean, I really was, because my mom said, honey, you're a great basketball player. And I go out for the team, and I got cut. And it was a devastating moment, man. And we all have these moments as kids. And I never forget going to the gym wall with my friends and not seeing my name on that wall. And this friend gave me a poem, which was called Don't Quit. And at 14, like, I wasn't a student. And I was like, you give me a poem? What is this thing? And I started to read this poem. And it became like a Bible verse to me, man. And I recited this poem and recited morning, noon, and night. And I've done it for years and years. It sits on my desk. The last two lines are, stick to the fight. When your hardest hit is when things seem worst, that you must not quit. And in 1981, I literally trademarked the words, don't quit. I kept it sacred for all these years. I spent a lot of money fighting off the big brands. And I just assumed, I have 4 kids, my daughter and 3 boys, that I would pass it on to them, because it was nothing that I felt important enough to put those two words on. I signed off shows with that, but not a product. And then I decide, we're going to make a difference. We come up with this great formulation for, first and foremost, 26 vitamins and minerals, no soy, no wheat, no corn, right? None of the bad stuff, no artificial sweeteners, no additives, gluten-free, kosher. Oh, wait a second. It tastes delicious, guys.
You've checked every box.
Everything. The sugar in the original formula is pure cane sugar. Now, as we get older, a lot of people need to keep the weight on. We have a max version of chocolate and vanilla. This is our orangeicle. I'm telling you, guys. I'm telling you, if you can see
send
that.
Send it over here, please.
Like creamsicles. And we have a chai tea along with our chocolate and vanilla. The best.
Hey.
The best at don'tquit.com.
Jake, we got Tom Skerritt waiting in the wings, so I'm going to have
tell
to bring
Tommy
it home.
Tell Tommy I say hey. Tell Big T, simmer down. Hang on a second.
And the website, don'tquit.com, is where you go. It's real stuff. So thanks, Jake. I like the motivation, brother. We'll talk
soon.
Brother,
great to see you, too. Great. Gina, Brian, great to see you guys.
Great
be
meeting
safe.
You.
Don't
thanks.
Quit.
Don't yep. quit. All right. Let me hit True Nijin, and then we'll bring Tom Skerritt on, who I was just watching Alien the other day, and him in that,
so
in Top Gun.
Yes. I'm about to bridle myself when he comes on, and I'll ask him exclusive Alien questions.
So much good stuff. All right. True Nijin. I've been taking True Nijin daily supplement, and this stuff is fantastic. You want to talk about stuff that works. True Nijin. About 6 months I've been taking it. Dr. Drew's been on it for a couple of years now. NAD is a vital cellular resource that supports daily functions like eating, sleeping, and even breathing. As we get older, NAD levels decline by as much as 50% due to stress, like aging, alcohol, lack of exercise, sun exposure. When NAD levels are low, cells have a harder time producing and the energy they need to perform their best. You need True Nijin. There's only one NAD supplement. I trust that's True Nijin. Backed by 11 clinical studies, Nobel Prize winning scientists, and global regulatory acceptance, True Nijin supports healthy aging. Make age just a number by visiting True Nijin. That's TRUNIAGEN.com. Go today. Use the code Adam at checkout to $20 off any 3 month order or more at TrueNijin.com. All right. The great Tom Skerritt. Is this guy's been acting for forever. He's there. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with legend Tom Skerritt right after this.
For just $25, you get wine and gifts. Ace's favorite stuff or products from ACS. Every single month, you get the drink you choose. It's hard to beat. Stuff and booze. Adam's monthly nut. Adam's monthly nut.
You heard Dick. It's time for another ballsy month of Adam's Monthly Nut. This month includes two Vinny Tortorich approved and invented ultra fat instant energy packs so you don't reach for that donut. Four shot glass ice molds so you can keep your whiskey cold and straight down the hatch. A bottle of Chateau Spill to remove wine stains or blood from the fine silk you're donning. Of course, a bottle of your choice and the coup de grace, a digital download of the very first basic cable commentary, Roadhouse. This $60 value can be yours for only $25 at CorollaDrinks.com. The Adam Carolla Show presents Tom Skerritt's Birthday Cocktail Party. For August 25th, let's see who's here. We welcome actress Blake Lively. The first Tsar of Russia, Ivan the Terrible. Hey, now we're cooking with Rachel Ray. Elvis Costello is here. So is Regis Philbin. Tim Burton, Gene Simmons, and his tongue. Let's make a deal with game show host Monty Hall. Supermodel Claudia Schiffer. And Bond, James Bond, or Sean Connery. Have a great party, Tom. Let's get back to the Adam Carolla Show.
Wow, that may be one of the best birthday parties we've ever featured.
Wrong party.
I was thinking about Ivan the Terrible. You're not born with, you're just born Ivan, right? Like later on, you're dubbed the Terrible, but that's not on your birth certificate, is it?
Ivan Schlusky.
Like, it's not
you
on
earned
your,
that.
It's not on your learner's permit when you're getting a license. Tom Skerritt is with us. Good to see you, Tom.
Well, nice to see you too. You look kind of small there on the screen.
Oh, I'm sure it's all just technology. I'm looking at your incredible career, of course, Top Gun, Alien, which they just were running Alien over the weekend. I don't know if you're aware of that. No. Good. I feel like someone should have noted, made you aware of that. But also, way back, TV shows, Gunsmoke, Bonanza, 12 O'Clock High, Combat. People don't remember the show Combat. I used to watch Combat when I was a kid. It was a World War II TV series, I think about a like tank or jeep battalion or something like that in World War II. So, Tom, you've been at it since you were what age? How old were you when you got your first acting role?
Oh, that's so long ago. I could barely remember it, and I wasn't looking for work as an actor. So I was at UCLA a long time ago when you could afford going to UCLA. And I was not certain what I wanted to do, but I was thought writing was what I was drawn for, so I became an English major. And one thing led to another. I saw Citizen Kane. And I said, I want to write and direct that film. And that's always been my standard. I thought, well, if I was going to write for an actor, I got to know what it feels like to write for an actor to do it effectively. So I started doing some acting. I was also very shy and not the kind of guy that wants to stick himself out in front of the crowd. And I thought, well, okay, this is a way to fight through that wall, that shyness, and learn what it felt like to be out there having to remember all of your lines and make sure that you do the best job you possibly can out here.
When you were doing...
Somebody saw me in a play and hired me to be in a movie, and that's where I met Robert Redford and Sidney Pollack when he was still an actor.
When you were doing Aliens...
My wife just reminded me about Bob Redford. Bob Altman came later. But Bob Altman, he was a TV director, lived in the neighborhood.
Robert Altman?
And I had a real nice rapport around the same time. And I don't remember specifically how it happened, but here we are meeting this TV guy who says, sure, come on in, do a combat. What the hell? I didn't have an agent. This seemed to be kind of fun to do. It was very therapeutic to do it. And that's where it started, on Combat.
So,
with Robert.
Yeah, Combat ran from like 62 to 67. So I was a very young child, but I remember that show being on primetime network TV, like a World War II show on primetime network TV. There you are. So I was watching Alien over the weekend because, as I said, they're running it. And my first thought was, my God, is this movie 40 years old or 40 plus years old?
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't look. I remember it was 79. I went and looked it up again just to make sure because it didn't look that old. Most sci-fi stuff or that in that genre looks very dated. When it's that was 79, I believe. So it still looked amazing. Everything held up. But did you know what you were on to when you were doing that movie? Did you have a feeling of what it was?
I knew halfway through we had a classic. There was something about Ridley Scott from the beginning. The film, a little history on that. I was doing a film, I don't know, somewhere in the country, and I got a script to read, and I read it, and I said, they said, there's no money, there's $2 million budget, and there's no one else involved, no director, no other actors. And I looked at it, and I thought, well, $2 million, it's a straight, solid story, it needs imagination, that means it's going to have to be more than $2 million, or this is going to be an Ed Wood movie. And so I stalled for a while. And meanwhile, I saw Ridley Scott's first film, The Duelist, which is magnificent. And I said, this guy, I've got to remember his name, whoever he is, first time director of a feature movie. And they called up a couple of days later and said, okay, the budget's been moved up to $10 million. And we've hired this English actor, or director, Ridley Scott. And I said, I'm there. So it was a lot about the directors. And the story is first, a solid story, always has that subconscious thing that writers put in, that directors draw out, and writers get angry at them for doing, because they have no idea what they've done with the writing. They're always loaded, and it becomes a film like MASH or like Alien. It just becomes much more because of the filmmaker, and that's an inexplicable thing. They've got it or they don't.
Yeah,
there's a great documentary that came out just a couple of years ago. I'm talking to the audience now because, Tom, you're obviously aware of it. It's called Memory, Origins of Alien, and you participated in it, which made it that much better. So from a fan of the movie, thank you for participating in it. But if you guys want to know more about the making of and the casting of and the themes and the insights and the hidden messages, it is fascinating, and it's a classic for a reason. Like I said, there's so many elements that had to come together that came together at just the right time. They upped the budget, they got the right cast, like Giger, you know, the artist who did all the Alien, you know, models. It all came together at the right time to make this perfect movie.
Oh, it sure did, and that's what I felt. That stuff you feel, you can't explain it. You say, I remember one of the actors kind of moving, getting a little moody. I said, bear in mind, we're in the middle of making a classic. So he perked up a little bit when he started thinking about that. There was no way we could get around that. You were talking about the little details.
Yep.
The details in all of this. And the details are usually something that is inspired by something the writer did in the first place. He's totally unaware of it. It can be one word in a sentence that the director can look at, or actor for that matter, and get a whole scenario on it. That's what the creative imagination will always do. It gets more than what we thought it was intended to do. And that's a lot what happened with all these guys, Altman and Ashby, Hal Ashby and Ridley Scott. Those three in particular are the ones I measured with through all
of this. You mentioned the writing, and that one of the revelations I found fascinating from that documentary about Alien was a lot of the characters were written and to be either gender. You know what I mean? That's where that names like Ripley and Dallas and whatever. Can you talk about the casting? Did you read for any other roles, or did you meet any of your castmates? How did that go?
Well, as I said, it just came to me. It didn't have any clothes on. And I thought, well, you know, get dressed and, you know, let's see what happens in a few weeks. So meanwhile, they got the director, and then rest of the cast was put in. I don't know the specifics of that, but I know Sigourney was the only one I wasn't aware of. She was right off of New York stage. So she knew what she was doing, as did the wonderful two English actors, John Hurt and Ian Holm, who died not too long ago. Mm-hmm. Both of them were, a lot of this is just watching other actors work for me. I always was looking, wow, what a wonderful thing. Maybe I'll use what they just did, because it's already embedded in me. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You cannot explain these. You cannot repeat anything the way someone else does. They're different personalities.
Can we get back to talking? Sorry. Can we get back to talking about your episode of Combat from 1966?
We spent too much time away from it.
I was 2 years old. I was living in Pennsylvania.
I think I was told to do it 2 or 3 of those.
So it's interesting, as I think about it, you know, being in Top Gun and being an Alien, it's like two incredible, iconic movies for different reasons. You know, one of them is just a corn dog that everyone remembers from their childhood. You know, like one is satisfying and good, but it's like, it's comfort food. It's like a Top Gun. It's like, that's what that is. And then Alien is an artistic masterpiece, but they're both pretty embedded in the psyche of America, you know. And like, and I don't know if you have thoughts about this at your age, but I have thoughts like you will always be in two of these iconic movies for as many people see it for as long as the earth is with us. And it just goes on. And I always thought that was something attractive about film acting. You do radio, but it just kind of goes into the ether. You do TV episodes. For the most part, they all just kind of blow away. And you do many things, even books and things like that. But you will always be that person at that age in that moment forever. And at some point, 100 years from now, someone is going to say to their kid, you know, oh, you're 11. It's time we watch Alien. Or it's time we watch Top Gun.
Or MASH.
Or MASH.
People have forgotten about MASH and the story about behind that is
MASH, the movie, right. Yeah, tell us the story behind MASH.
Well, I'll try to make it short, but basically, as I said, I was mentoring with Altman, and he was the list down at the bottom of the list of 20 directors, and all the other guys did not want to do the script, the screenplay of MASH, which was just a solid, nothing outstanding about it, except that there was a little bit of favoring the Vietnam War, like, let's get behind those boys, to, you know, see what we can do for them, which I have no problem with that. But it was at a time that politically and I think socially we were all feeling, we got to get rid of this Vietnam War. And he had that notion from the beginning that we got to make this a lot lighter than what it is. It's not just about surgery behind the battle lines. This is how we deal with it. And that's how it twisted into what he wanted to do, because he was using it. It was sort of a laboratory exercise for him. He had three mics where we had multiple groups of people in there, which was all, by the way, the background was a just an improvisational group, I think from San Francisco, something like that. So these people knew what to do. So he had that in the background going. And I'm going around saying, you guys got to, you know, all this stuff that just goes on, details that go on, where you go and tell them that, hey, the camera might float your way because it's three cameras and you have a microphone possibly under your desk. So think of something, do it in the background. That's the enriching part of MASH, is when you look at it, there's a lot going on, funny stuff everywhere in every direction.
Is MASH, MASH the TV show was the Korean War. Was MASH the film movie taking place in the Korean War or conflict?
Yes.
Yes.
It was all taken away from being specifically about the Vietnam War. It's just
right,
war.
But it was it was used this war to make a statement about war we're currently in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it was.
Sorry. And Altman directed, that must have been, I don't know, Brian, I'll ask you, or Tom, I'll ask you. Is that early Altman?
Yeah, 1970.
He was an industrial filmmaker that came to LA back in the early 60s. That's when I met him. He was directing television, and he directed a lot of combats. So that's where I was working.
I knew it.
The fun fact, the theme song, the iconic theme song that became the theme song for the TV show, the instrumental version, was actually a song in the booth lyrics written by his son, who was like 14 or something at the time, called Suicide is Painless. That's the theme. That's the Suicide
right.
is Painless.
Right, it brings on many changes.
Yeah, Michael Altman, who made more money than anybody did.
Come up with a theme song. Let's talk about today for a few minutes. I know there's a new lifestyle channel. It's EVRGRN, showcases timeless stories, artists, and music from the Pacific Northwest. And it's
Evergreen, right?
It's streaming.
Evergreen.
Oh, yeah.
EVRGRN.
Right, Evergreen. But you don't write out Evergreen, right? You do?
No. What we have is access to a lot of stuff that's just been on the shelves. Really good material.
Can stream it free on Stirr. That's STIRR.com. Got that right?
Yeah.
So what is that? Tell us about that.
About Stirr or the Evergreen?
Evergreen.
Okay. I've always loved storytelling, obviously. I have Irish roots, a little bit of English as well, but mostly Irish. So there's always that draw. What kind of story is this? Is this story, does it work? All of this is the way I look at a script. And it's just, what we're doing is collecting a lot of these wonderful films that have just been, whether they're little documentaries or whatever they are, everything is a story. We are all stories. And it was just out there. We developed a relationship with the National Board of Film in Canada, and they had a lot of films. They had really good, nice, like local films up there that had never had released, certainly not in America. So we were able to get 130. We're still collecting it, actually, up to 150 hours of 24-hour streaming 7 days a week. And it's just everything I look at, it's just, that's good. That's got me. I love what we have. I have Leslie Grandy, who's really been sorting all of this out along the way, our CEO. So that's basically everything is just a good story told well and has nothing to do. It's all good. It makes you feel good. Makes you feel imaginative. Makes you feel creative. And my God, man, don't we need that in this environment we're in?
Yes, we do. And it strikes me that there's just so much out there now. You know, when I was young, whatever movies were out there, you probably saw them. There wasn't the amount. I mean, the sheer volume of material that, and some of it good, and you've never even heard of the name of it. So for you, Tom, how much acting are you doing now, or not now, but I mean, you know, were you doing coming into this whole COVID business?
Well, I did a few years ago, did New York, which is really acting, and at least substantially so, because that's all you do when you're in New York. I really just, all that stuff I started years ago when I couldn't finish a screenplay because I'm working a lot. So I'd start and put it away, and now I'm rediscovering a lot of stuff that I've done over the years that I'm now coming back to and writing and doing the final drafts on them, so one after another. So I'm getting a little bit worn out by looking at the computer, which I love to have. But nonetheless, it's just one thing after another in terms of the writing, and one thing after another in terms of Triple Squirrels, which is the owner of Evergreen.
Have you been pretty much going nonstop for 60-some-odd years in terms of your career?
You know, real quick, I remember as a kid, a couple of us were listening to some old man rattling on, and I didn't know what he was talking about, but he was telling some kind of story. Then he stopped and he looked away, and this kid next to me says, "So how'd you get to be so old, mister?" And I said, "I just keep moving, kid. I just keep moving." That's really basically the thing I have never been able to get out of my head. I operate that way.
Yeah.
Just
kidding. Yeah, I that seems to be it's a good theme. It's also there's kind of a thought, which is if you just get up every day and do 50 push-ups, might you be able to do 50 push-ups for the rest of your life? Now, I know it doesn't work that way, but it kind of works that way. Like if you just do this thing, if you just move every day, then where's that big break? Now you can, you know, slip in the tub and bust your hip. But what I'm saying is it seems to me the plan of just keep moving. That always just feels like that's always been my plan. We're just talking to Body by Jake. That seems to be his plan. Seems to be Mr. Skerritt's plan. Can we talk a little Top Gun for a few minutes, Tom?
Sure.
Another huge iconic role in movie. Was that a movie that you knew you're onto something with Alien? Did you know you're onto something with Top Gun?
Before we got involved, because Tony Scott was going to be doing it, I met him during Alien, Rudy's brother, and he was going to do whatever Ridley, the magic that Ridley did with Alien, he was going to do that to Top Gun. So it was, again, about who the directors were. So going into that, there was no question but whether, and it would have music. If it had music, it was going to work.
What a connection. What a connection that, I mean, we've all seen both movies a million times. We love both movies. And I mean, Brian might be the exception, but the connection between the family, the brothers, completely lost on me until this moment.
Never thought about it.
Never.
Oh. Hmm.
That sounds like a river runs through it.
Yeah, now we're thinking about it for too long.
And you're the reason I've always wanted to go to Missoula, Montana, and I have yet to accomplish that dream. But I swear, and just Adam, if I may, I mean, you between A River Runs Through It and Top Gun and Poison Ivy, for God's sake, you play such these father figures. I mean, no more Cosby. You're America's father. You've been America's father for decades. And I'm wondering if you sought out that kind of fatherly leader role, sort of a not quiet, but you know, just sort of a quiet intelligence, a quiet dignity that so many of these roles have, or do people just think of that role and go, we got to get Tom involved?
I don't know what their thinking is. I don't necessarily even know they're going to make an offer until they make an offer. I mean, they offer and they send a script and you read it, and it either works or it doesn't work. But I had kids to feed, so I'm more or less really tend to lean toward that, which not always. There aren't that many great scripts out, and I just fortunately happen to fall into these other situations. But I think largely because what you're describing, people also say I'm different in everything I do. I remember some critic, when I was first starting out, wrote a review of a film and pointed me out as being a character actor in a movie star's body.
That's quite a compliment.
I've always remembered that. That was very flattering.
I've been called a rocket scientist in a playmate's body, but sorry, stepped on you. Hey, I should tell people to go to, so they should go to watch this free streaming service. They should go to STIRR.com, and they can watch the channel, which is EVRGRN, right? Got that? For the stories we have not seen before. So, Brian, for a guy like you who's seen everything three times, you should go there and discover some new stories.
It's 284, by the way, is a channel number.
Sorry, 284?
Yeah.
284 on stir.com. Tom Skerritt, thank you so much.
Evergreen is the name of it.
Yes. Right. Thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. My pleasure.
The great Tom Skerritt, everybody. All right. Let me hit ButcherBox here. This episode is brought to you by ButcherBox. I love ButcherBox. I love everything they produce. It is, it's better than it needs to be. That's what I will say. And it's better than store-bought stuff. I mean, we do fish, we do burgers. Olga makes Butcher Box almost every night. Delicious, 100% grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, heritage breed pork, wild-caught seafood, sourced from folks who go above and beyond for the caring of the animals, the environment, sustainability. Average cost, less than $6 per meal. Options and delivery frequencies to fit your needs. Cancel anytime. No penalty. And the ground beef for life is back, which I love because Olga will do the burgers and also do the meatloaf out of it. Do yourself a favor. Put the hard-boiled egg in the middle of the meatloaf like my grandpa used to do. Delectable, especially if you get a little ketchup on there. Anyway, I got Olga coached up to do that too. Now for a limited time, new members get 2 pounds of free ground beef in every order by signing up today at butcherbox.com/Adam. Again, it's great protein. It's all top shelf. And more importantly, it's there. you know where it is. It's you're never out of your protein. ButcherBox.com/Adam is where you go. All right. Gio gave you the sneaker pimp story.
Just a short version. So Liam, a band member on Sneaker Pimps, was drunk, and he just spent the time arguing with Drew, but it was entirely one-sided, and then he walked off the show.
Oh, that's right.
So, yeah.
People would read an article in, like, Spin magazine that said AIDS couldn't be transferred through blood or something like that, and then they would start telling Dr. Drew how infectious diseases worked or how AIDS worked or how the immune system worked, whatever. And these would be drunken guys from England who had no, they read an article on the flight over. And if Drew didn't agree with them, some of them would get really shitty and pissy about it. And this guy just got up and left. That's a lot of uncomfortable nights with British bands. It's funny. One of the bands was Blur, and Blur came on, and Blur was horrible too. They were just like,
they seem horrible.
Angry, drunken British guys. British guys.
They're the anti-Tom Skerritt.
Oh, my God. The British bands, they're either your fucking best friend or your worst enemy. A lot of them didn't really float around the middle. Chumbawamba. Oh.
This might be a question for Gio, but did Oasis or anyone from Oasis come on? Because you've never, ever mentioned them, but they would have been pretty popular around that time.
I don't remember that, but maybe Gio will answer. But I certainly do remember Chumbawamba. And I always remember them because they were explaining to me that they were anarchists. And they were sort of going, I was like, well, how would anarchy work? You know, like, who it's like everyone does whatever job they want to do. And I was like, well, so you're a garbage man on a Monday, and then you're a commercial airline pilot on a Tuesday? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, well, how would that work? And they mean, what do you mean? How's it not going to work? It's like, I don't think it would work at all. And they're like, why should you have to be a garbage man? They're like, well, you don't have to be a garbage man, but there are garbage men. Well, why should he pick up the airline pilot's garbage? Like, because that's what he didn't study in school. I don't know what the fuck to tell you.
He took the job. He applied for it, interviewed for it, and got the job.
And then I was like, and then how does it work with your CD? Like, you're selling your CD, and they're like, people don't have to pay for it. They can just take it. And I'm like, yeah, but then you have to pay your engineer and the studio, and you have expenses. And they're like, that doesn't matter. If people want to just take it, they should be able to just take it. And I'm like, I don't think this plan is really going to work, you know, big picture. I mean, maybe you could run a smallish kibbutz with some of the most honest people on the planet. But big picture, I think there are going to be airplanes falling from the sky with this anarchy approach to life.
Yeah. Did it come up how they spent or what they did with the money from their one single?
I don't know.
Did they give it away? Did they burn it in a trash can?
Is Chumbawamba still anarchist? And how does it work? And again, it's kind of like the, hey, you know, sort of free healthcare and free college and free education, like free everything. It's all good. It's kind of like community policing. Like, it's good, but you got to pull it off. You can't just make the announcement. If you just make the announcement and go home, you know, world peace or end all wars or whatever, no more nukes or whatever it is. You have to kind of figure it out, and then you can implement it. Chumbawamba didn't have a well-crafted plan for their anarchy.
I beg to differ. No, you're wrong. Hmm. You get knocked down.
That's right.
You get up again.
That's right.
They told you, they couldn't be clearer with their plan.
Yeah, what was, I don't know if is Chumbawamba still around? Are they still anarchists?
No, they broke up in 2012.
Are they still anarchists? Or what do they do? I mean, they were a goddamn handful, those guys. But anyway, all right, let me hit quick Simply Safe, and then we'll do some news. No one should feel unsafe at home, period, and that's where Simply Safe comes in. Simply Safe, two eyes, simplysafe.com/am. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back and do the news with Gene and Bald right after this.